I want to welcome our speaker for tonight, Paige, to the Monday Night Speaker Series. And Paige is going to share her experience.
Thank you, Christine. Hi, I'm Paige. I'm a compulsive read and food addict.
Hi, Paige.
And I do thank the group and Christine for the gracious invitation to come here and share a little bit about my story and for what God has done in my life. I really do appreciate that opportunity. Just a little bit of background, claim my seat. I was first introduced to Overeaters Anonymous in, what year? I guess it was 1991. Actually by a professional, by a therapist, but I didn't stick around, but the seed had been planted. That very first meeting that I went to, I felt I was at home, and I heard people talking about things that I had felt for years, but like I said, I didn't really stick around. And then I came into the program more seriously in 1995 when I had hit a bottom. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that, as I get into my story. But anyway, so I've been in the room since 1995. My current abstinence is a little bit over 6 years. I've been abstinent since February 16, 2002. God's taken away, 135 pounds or so. And I'm definitely a food addict. And I am so grateful to this program and to my higher power and my abstinence because it's definitely given me a life back. When I first came to OA in 1991 and even in 95, I was pretty much suicidal, did not want to live. And I heard somebody talk about that at my first meeting, and I thought they were nuts. How could you possibly share something so intimate and so personal in a room full of strangers? And today, my life is so different. It's very easy for me to share where I was. So just kind of in keeping with tradition of what I was taught in the program, what I'll try to do tonight a little bit is talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. For me, my compulsive overeating goes far back before my memories. I really, don't know at what point. I'm probably born a compulsive overeater. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. I know that my mother, comforted me with food. I don't blame her. It's not her fault. I think that there's something very different with me, than in other people that I see. When I was about 5 years old, I went up 2 dress sizes pretty quickly, and they even hospitalized me to test for thyroid and, thought it was something physical. It wasn't. By 7 years old, on diets, sneaking food. I only lived a block and a half from the school, and somehow I would find a way to get money and stop at the store and hurry up and rush and eat things before I got home. My mother would see because I was on a diet. I ate alcoholically from a very young age. That's just what I did. I can remember, and you hear some of these kind of stories from alcoholics. I would go into convenience store, and because I was embarrassed to buy all the binge food for myself, I would say things like, oh, my brother wants this and my sister would like that. Meanwhile, I was picking out all these things for myself, but I was trying to hide it and conceal. That was grammar school. So again, my compulsive overeating just goes as far back as it could be. I was never one of those people who really successfully dieted. That wasn't my story. I continued to gain weight. I weighed over 200 pounds by the time I was in eighth grade. Was miserable. I had a little bit of success with one diet in high school, and what that did for me, I lost 40, 50 pounds or so, and what that did for me actually was just go to prove some denial, like I always had it in the back of my mind, well, I could do it if I really wanted to, I could muster up the willpower and I could lose weight if I I'm just not motivated, I just, I don't know how to do it, I'm not motivated, that was all really, in retrospect, denial, lies, the acronym for denial, didn't even know I was lying. Food was just always a part of my life and what I did, and in college, even can remember, you know, going back to my dorm room, loading up on junk, isolating, cutting classes, hiding out, you know, that kind of stuff. It was always part of my life. My first bottom, when I came into the rooms in 1995, was I had this list. You know, when I graduated college, when I got a job, when I got my own apartment, you know, when I had this accomplishment, then I'll be happy. Well, all those things came true in my life. I had an apartment on the exact block that I wanted. Miserable. Because what I didn't know then, which I came to learn now, is I took me everywhere I went. So I was the problem. You know, this is what I learned later on. That's in hindsight, I was the problem. So no matter where I was or what I was doing, I was still there. So I was miserable, you know. So that was my first real bottom. And I came into the program of Overeaters Anonymous, but I was very defiant. And I didn't listen. I didn't take suggestions. I didn't follow the program as it was outlined. I did things my way, full of self-sufficiency. Fought a food plan tooth and nail for years. Relapsed chronically. You know, when I in 95, when I first came in after that bottom, I did have, when I came back to the rooms in January of 1995, I did have a very dramatic spiritual experience at that time. I had a moment of clarity, and that's what brought me back, because like I had shared a little earlier, I was introduced to the rooms in 91, but it was in 95 when I hit this bottom. I basically got to the point where I said to God, I always believed in God, but my concept of God at that time was a God who was out there, up there, going to judge me when I die kind of God. No place in my everyday life. It just was very like, you know, that was the God I had at that time. And I wasn't a very particularly religious person. I mean, I had some religious education, but I really wasn't religious. I didn't go to church or anything like that. But I went to church, and I got on my knees, and I just threw myself and was like, God, if this is life, I don't want it. Like I said, I was suicidal at the time, and I basically said, show me the way, and he did. I had a moment of clarity several days later. Like I said, a very dramatic spiritual experience, and I came to OA. And at that point, food was just the furthest thing from my mind. For the first time in my life, I would forget to eat. I was so busy living. Weight fell off me, and I lost about 100 or so pounds at that time. But like I said, I really wasn't working the program. I wasn't getting a sponsor. I didn't really have a food plan. I didn't do all the steps. I didn't know. Steps to me were something on a lampshade. You know, if you ever, back when I came to meetings, a lot of meetings had them where the steps and the traditions were up on a shade on the wall. And I thought those, and I would look at them and I would say, done that, don't need that. You know, that's how I thought I'd work the steps. You know, didn't know there was like instructions, didn't know there was a whole book about them. You know, I've come to realize that later on. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is actually a textbook. And although this is Overeaters Anonymous and not AA, we use that book. I use that book, and I just translate, you know, anywhere where they have alcohol for food and anywhere where they say alcoholic for compulsive overeater. And the instructions for working the 12 steps are actually in that book. You know, and then, of course, there's step books. There's the OA 12 and 12. There's the AA 12 and 12, which are actually essays and expand on the experience of working the steps. But the actual instructions are in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't own that book and you don't use that book as a textbook, I would highly recommend that you reconsider that, because when I actually got to a point a little bit later on in my recovery when I did that, it made all the difference in the world. But anyway, just kind of where I was at when I first came in, so I had lost this weight, but I really wasn't working the program, and something happened, whatever it was, 6 months in, 8 months in, whatever happened, because, you know, I didn't change. I was still essentially the same person that I was on the inside. I was just, you know, kind of on a pink cloud and had some grace for a period of time. I didn't have permanent recovery at that time, and I picked up, and I gained all the weight back and yo-yoed. In the next few years, until 2002, So it was about 6-7 years, whatever it was, constantly chronic relapser. I couldn't get 90 days, 30 days, a week, a day. Nobody is more surprised about my abstinence than I am. I didn't think I could be abstinent. And the reality is I couldn't. That was the problem. I was trying to do it myself. It had to come from a power greater than me, not a sponsor, not a husband. It had to come from, I choose to call my higher power God. I'm very comfortable with that. So anyway, like I said, I chronically relapsed for a long time. Fought a food plan, tooth and nail. I thought I could, the sugar I pretty much knew, and that I was willing to stay away from, but other substances I wasn't, as long as it didn't have sugar in it, and I would eat all kinds of, like, sugar-free this and whatever. And chronically relapsed and wondered why. I didn't read ingredients, so there was, it could be like, whatever, you know how sugar hides under different names, like modified corn starch or whatever like that. That could be like the second ingredient, but it wasn't sugar, totally in denial. So that went on for a real long time, and I would sometimes see people in meetings that, and I kind of stayed in the rooms most of the time, but sometimes I would leave, and I would see people sometimes that who had what I wanted, and I'd go up to them and they tell me about their food plan. Isn't that deprivation? Isn't that terrible? And wasn't willing to do it. And what I found out later on that was real freedom. When I finally surrendered to a food plan, was in the end of 01, sometime probably in the fall of 2001, I was introduced to a food plan that for the first time removed my addictive substances. I was weighing and measuring, and I was reading labels, and I was staying away. Because, like I said, part of the chronic relapsing is the physical, because I was still ingesting substances that I was addicted to. And part of it, of course, was, the spiritual and the emotional, because I wasn't doing anything with that. But, a part of it was the physical, and I like to share that because this is Overeaters Anonymous, and it's very much so about the food and being powerless. And I needed to be on a food plan that removed those addictive substances. So I finally gave into that, like I said, at the end of 01, and I thought, okay, I'm doing great. And I was abstinent for about 5 months or so, and I picked up. Because the food plan wasn't the magic answer. Without the rest of the program, the food plan was useless. Because what I've come to realize, again, this is all in hindsight, is step one, my powerlessness over my food kind of works like this. I have a spiritual malady. I have this hole inside me that wants to get filled up. I'm restless, I'm irritable, I'm discontent, I'm depressed. I suffer from self-pity. I think everybody's out to get me. I take things personally. I feel useless. I can't have like good relationships with other people. Lot of things along those lines is how it plays out for me. So that all goes on. Then my head, my sick mind says, food will fix it. Food will make that feel better. Or, it might not even be one of those things. I might be in a perfectly good mood. I could be at a wedding and I'm celebrating and, food will make that better. Or it could just be Tuesday afternoon. It doesn't need to be some reason, good or bad. I'm a food addict. But the sick mind, should tell me, you've been down this road many times before. When you take this substance or you eat this kind of volume or you do this, this is going to be the consequence. Kind of like when you put your hand on a hot stove, you remember you get burned. Well, I don't remember I get burned with the food. I have this forgetter. Like, I can't remember what it's like. I mean, I could be, binging today, wake up tomorrow, miserable hungover, sugar hangovers, food hangovers. Oh, this is disgusting. I hate myself. I can't do this anymore. By 5 o'clock, I can be eating again. It's that's the mind. Like, every relapse I ever had started with my mind giving me permission, or that mental blank spot of just completely forgetting about the consequences, or, saying screw it and didn't care, whatever. And then, so that's sort of the spiritual and the thinking, the mental, and the physical, the phenomenon of craving. I am a food addict. There are certain substances that I cannot ingest that literally I am addicted to, and when I take them into my body, I physically crave more. So that's why the food plan for me is so important, that I don't have my addictive substances. But then what am I going to do with the other two things? Because, you know, once I have the food out of my system, like I did at the end of 2001, for some time, you know, after 5 months, I'm not feeling, you know, you don't crave what you don't have. It's out of my system. I'm not craving that stuff. Why did I go back? It's because I needed to address those other areas. And how did I address that? Was by doing the steps, by incorporating the 12 steps to the best of my ability on a daily basis. And I have not done that perfectly, but I have done it as consistently as I can since February of 2002. At that time, I can remember that particular bottom in the sense I was driving to a meeting in Montclair, New Jersey, and it was just like, I also was a very depressive person, and I was thinking like, do I eat first and then I get depressed, or do I get depressed first and then I eat? Because again, mine was, you know, very coupled together. That might not be everybody's experience, but that was my experience. And I got to the point, and this was the surrender, and I didn't know it at the time. Who cares? It doesn't matter. I'm a food addict. I really have this thing. I cannot do this anymore. And I walked into that meeting, and I got myself a sponsor. And just through a series of coincidences, and she also was learning to work the steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she introduced that to me, and I went to weekend studies, and I got involved in a group who was working the steps, and I learned a lot from them, and I did. You know, it wasn't just learning. It's a doing. It's an experiential kind of thing. I can't just read about it. I can't think about the steps. They're actions. You know, I had to actually take the actions of working the steps. And the first two steps are more contemplative. I had to look back at, you know, I had to see what it really meant to be a food addict, and if I was powerless. Because, you know, when I came in for a long time at 300 and something pounds, yeah, I have a problem with food, you know, and it was easy for me to say that I was a food addict, but I really didn't have the first step. Like, I really, you know, it talks about in our literature, in the Big Book, it talks about that conceding to our innermost self that we're really done, that we're really lit, that we can't do this. And I didn't, you know, it was kind of like, yes, I'm a food addict, but I'll still do it my way. You know, I was still holding on to that. And then it talks about, you know, the idea has to be smashed that we're like normal people or I ever can be. And I still kind of thought, well, I'll do this for a while and maybe then I can, you know, eat certain things in moderation or whatever. So there was a lot of denial there. So I had to look at those experiences and come to that admission that I really am powerless. And I'm not like other people and I never will be. And I'm done forever. You know, it talks about something that we read in the opening of this meeting tonight about experiencing permanent recovery from compulsive overeating by repeating day after day, you know, actions that we took. There is permanent recovery, permanent in the sense of a daily reprieve based on our actions. You know, it talks about that right in the thing that we read at the beginning here. Not permanent as in I'm cured and I can just go out there and do whatever the heck I want, but recovered in the sense that my symptoms are removed as long as I do certain things. You know, and those certain things are really just trying to put the self-sufficiency aside and being God-dependent and letting God run my life and working the steps and, you know, taking inventory and making amends and trying to help other people and all the things that it entails to work this program. The other part of step one was also the unmanageability. You know, because when I was in an active addiction, it was real easy for me to see that unmanageability. But I've had to come to realize that my unmanageability really had very little to do with my food and my addiction. I'm as powerless over running my own life as I am over my food. My character defects, which, you know, I know what they are today. You know, I learned to uncover them by doing inventory and by doing some of this work. And, you know, things like procrastination and selfishness and dishonesty and, I don't know, I can't think of any, but I have a whole laundry list at home. You know, all these character defects. I'm just as powerless over them as I am anything else. And I've seen that even in recovery, even being abstinent. Like I said, I don't work this program perfectly. There's been times in this past 6 years where I've kind of rested on my laurels and become complacent. You know, I'm still weighing and measuring, but I'm not necessarily doing all the other disciplines. And that unmanageability, boom, comes back and hits me. And I've hit some, you know, spiritual bottoms, you know, where thank God, by the grace of God, I didn't pick up the food and go back to the substance, but boy, I could have, because I wasn't doing what I needed to do to arrest this disease. You know, I used to think of food as my problem. I used to think that, really, honestly, for a lot of years, I thought weight was my problem. Then I sort of shifted it and thought food was my problem. But now what I've come to realize, and it talks a lot about that, especially in our third step, that I'm the problem, you know. But before I talk about the third step, let me just real quick, number two, came to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, I saw my insanity in the first step. I saw how powerless I am over food, how I go back to it no matter how much it was causing me pain and hurting me and making me want to kill myself and just being miserable, and I couldn't run my own life. And it's kind of like with step two, it's like there's got to be a God, or else, you know. I'm trying to think. I have a kind of a derogatory way of saying it. I don't want to necessarily say it, but it's kind of like, or you know, it's like there better be a God, or else I'm screwed. I don't know how else to say it really nicely, but that's sort of where I get to with the second step. If I take a really good first step, that's where I get in the second step. There's got to be something, you know, that can fix this, and you know, it's got to come from a higher power, or else, you know, what else am I going to do? And then in the third step, you know, when it talks about making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, first of all, it says a decision. I used to get stuck in the 1, 2, 3 relapse mode. I did that for a long time, too, because I thought I had to turn my will and my life over to a care of God in step three. And I thought, like, well, I'm not really doing that. I'm not really depending on God. I'm not this perfect person. I don't have this perfect relationship with this higher power. So I couldn't move on. Meanwhile, I'd go back to the food all the time. It doesn't say that. It says to make a decision. And what I learned in this recovery is that I had to decide that I was going to work the rest of the steps, that I was going to go ahead and move ahead with the process, that I was going to continue to weigh and measure my food. And, you know, it was kind of like my life is going to be over here and my food was going to be over there. And it didn't matter. Like, I can remember very early on in abstinence, like, I would call my food in. I'd, you know, call in committed amounts of food and whatever happened, and I'm hysterically crying as I'm, like, eating my weight in. Like, it didn't matter. It's like my life and my food for the first time were really separated. It doesn't really matter what's going on in my life. Again, good, bad, indifferent, doesn't matter. My food is what it is. It's there's not a whole lot of flexibility with that. But, you know, what it talked about in the third step, again, making that decision, and my will is my thoughts, and my life is my actions. And I have to make that decision that I'm going to go through the rest of the process to turn that over to a loving, you know, care of a higher power. And it talks a lot in our literature, in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the third step, self-will run riot. You know, selfishness, self-seeking, that's the root of the problems. And that's what I've come to realize to be true. Again, this is all in retrospect. At the time, like I said, I used to think it was weight, then I thought it was food, but what the real problem was me. Food was the solution. You know, I was the problem, and I used to turn to food thinking it would, you know, make it feel better. You know, it was the effect. You know, it's a little bit of a different effect, you know, than alcohol and drugs, but nevertheless, there was some ease and comfort that I received from food. It was my best friend, yet it was my enemy. You know, but there was something about that excess food and certain types of food in particular that I did for a long time, you know, get comfort from. And like I said, I had to realize that food was not my problem. It was the solution. The real problem was me, and what was I going to do about it? You know, and then I had to move forward with the rest of the process. And I finally did, you know, write inventory. I wrote a four-step inventory, and I did it out of the instructions of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I saw for the first time the part that I played. You know, I had all these resentments, I had all these fears, and I could tell you all these people and all these things that they did to me, and very victim role, self-pity. I suffer from delusion. Highly suffer from delusion. I can twist and contort anything. And putting pen to paper and having a higher power work through me to do that. You know, I was taught to pray when I write inventory and to just let God take over. And, you know, I was able to see a lot of things for the first time. And, you know, there's a certain person in my family in particular. Every time I thought of this person, physical, not in my stomach, that was gone, you know, after doing this process. That gets removed. A lot of fears have left me. You know, I ask God to help me with that all the time, with fears, with resentments, with character defects. I ask God to help me be the person, you know, that He would have me be. I have made a list of amends, you know, people I've harmed. I've gone out. I've made amends. I'm still in the process of making some of those amends. I try to work the program, again, to the best of my ability on a daily basis. I won't say constantly because that's a little over-exaggerating, because I need to be honest. I make attempts to the best I can to look at what I'm doing, like self-examination. I've incorporated prayer and meditation into my life. You know, and I look for ways to be of service to other people in general, but especially other compulsive overeaters and food addicts, to try to carry the message, you know, of what has been so freely given to me. So that's a little bit about like the steps and just a lot of the promises that have come true. And I just wanted to pass around a couple of quick pictures. My husband happens to be in them as well. He's a member of this fellowship. And I had a little book, but I can't find it, so I just grabbed these. These are a couple pictures. I don't know if it was really my top weight or not, but you can obviously see the difference. And then there's one when I was pregnant with my son. I have gone through pregnancy abstinent in this program. It is possible to do that. I weighed and measured my food, and you know, I've learned how to live. You know, just it doesn't matter what the situation is. I can face anything. My higher power solves my problems or gives me the ability to reach out to other people. It's not like, you know, I always say this, my higher power doesn't come down and sit on the edge of my bed and talk to me and whisper all these things in my ear. That's not really so much how it works for me. My higher power talks to me in a lot of different ways. You know, I get messages in various ways and things like that. But mostly he works through other people. He works through sponsors. He works through each and every one of you at the meetings. All different ways my higher power works. You know, to bring me messages and to help me along my journey. And just like I said, I was able to experience pregnancy, being abstinent. Early motherhood was actually harder for me because I had this little life that I had to take care of, and it was very all-consuming. I'm telling you, when I first brought, thank God, you know, for my husband, I'm very blessed with the people I have in my life today. I would be like, you know, my son's like a week old, and like, you know, I'm all frazzled, and I don't know how to do this, right? So I don't know how to be a mother. So it's like, make me dinner. What do you want? You know, or make me an MA, like I eat a metabolic adjustment, and it's like, you know what I have? I have a fruit and a dairy. I don't care what it is. Just, you know, make me a meal. It doesn't really matter, you know. That was challenging. But again, I go anywhere. I do anything. I've been to weddings. Tomorrow I'm taking my son to an amusement park. You know, I'll get on water slides with him. I'll wear a bathing suit now. I know how to do these things. I know how to bring my lunch or plan ahead and call. Like, I didn't know how to do that stuff before. Like, you know, if I'm going to a wedding or a function or something like that at a banquet hall, I've been taught to call ahead and find out what the food is going to be and to speak to them and say, well, this is what I can have. Is that possible? If not, I bring my own or whatever. There's ways around everything. And again, that's not just stuff that I woke up one day knowing how to do. That was stuff I had to learn in this program, and people showed me how to do that. So many things. I made an amend recently to a family member, and I did. I owed the amend, and you know, when I shared with them about, you know, how I was sorry for some of the things as far as my dishonesty, my selfishness, and they're like, that's not you anymore. And that was really nice to hear, even though I know that I still needed to make that amend, because now it's more subtle. It's not, you know, I'm not that same person that I was. I'm not bossy, controlling. It's not as bad. Like, it's not like I wanted to just, you know, they talk and I was the director. You do this and you do that. And if everybody would just do what I say, everything would be wonderful and great. Everybody, you'd be happy, I'd be happy, you know. And of course, nobody wants to do that. And it never worked out that way. And, you know, a lot of that's been lifted. You know, there's twinges of it. There's things that come up again. I'm not, I haven't been made pure as the driven snow. You know, I still have character defects. I still have things that come up. But I'm just not the same person that I was. You know, I have relationships today with family members. You know, I have a sister that I had a very rocky relationship when I was very, you know, when I was a lot younger. And, you know, we've been able to have a close relationship over the years. And my mother, she passed away 8 years ago, but I was able to make amends with her before she passed. You know, we had a real love-hate relationship, and in the end it was all love. And, you know, the last, I forget what year I made my amends to her, probably 6 years before she passed away, we didn't have a fight. I mean, we would have knockout, drag-out brawls, and, you know, then the last 6 years, I was able to be there for her and, you know, not have any animosity. There was forgiveness. So many things. I'm just trying to share a little bit about, you know, what this program has given me, you know, beyond the physical, because it's a lot more than just the weight that I've lost. You know, and it's funny because my son, he talks now, and he's 2.5. Mommy, where are you going? Going to a meeting. Why? He doesn't understand. And, you know, and I tell him, because I need it for my sanity. You know, it'll make me a better wife. It'll make me a better mother. I struggled with that. You know, when I had my son, I started to lean back from meetings for a period of time. I wasn't going as regularly at all. But it's a dangerous place. Again, for me, when I've ever done that, when I get complacent and I start losing things, you know, I start not maybe calling my sponsor as consistently or not really praying and meditating, not getting to meetings, not really sponsoring. You know, when I've done those kind of things, and like I said, I've had spurts of that over the years. And then, of course, I'm not really working the steps. You know, they little by little, they start to fall by the wayside. Boy, does that unmanageability come back. And it probably was about a year ago, a little more than a year ago, when I hit another bottom. The same thing. Again, thank God I hadn't picked up the food, but that was only for the grace of God. But I kind of got into that space again where I was complacent and I really wasn't working the steps. I was sort of like an 8.5-er, I call it. Like, I got to the 9th step, and I did a bunch of them, and I did some hard ones, but I didn't finish. And then, like I said, and I stopped doing all this other stuff. And it was only a matter of time before I picked up. And again, I hit another bottom. Because now, at this point in my life, 1.5 years ago, had the husband, had the kid, had the house, had a job that I, you know, liked with some flexibility. I have Fridays off. I work from home. Had some money in the bank a little bit. You know, I'm not well off or anything. But, like, you know, all the ducks are in a row, so to speak, I think. Miserable. Had everything I ever wanted and was miserable. And it wasn't anybody or anything. It was just me. It was my outlook. It was my attitude. When I cut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit, when I cut myself off from my higher power, I am not a happy camper. It's, you know, it doesn't matter what I have in my life. And it's very, you know, it still amazes me sometimes to this day how much things can change overnight depending on my attitude with any given situation. You know, and it's amazing to me. I've learned a lot in the past 1.5 years too with, like I said, then when that happened, I went back through the steps. You know, I didn't just pick up where I left off because I had been so far removed from stuff. I went back through and I went through the book again and I did it all again and did unmanageability exercises. I really looked at everything, did another 4th step. Like I said, I'm currently in some amends now and I'm aggressively working on getting those all tied up. Because if I think that it doesn't have anything to do with me going back to the food, it does. You know, if I think that I can hide stuff or not fess up, because amends to me is a lot more than just the I'm sorry part. It's the change that happens. Like a friend of mine's works in a law firm, and she's always like, you know, when you make an amend to a document, it's a permanent change that you're making to that document. And that's what an amend is. It's not so much the, hey, you know, I'm sorry for what I did, but it's how am I living today? It's those living amends, you know. Have I really changed? Am I willing to do things differently? That's a lot more about what the amends process is for me. And it's definitely very much so related to whether I'll pick up another bite or not. And just like I said, the prayer and the meditation, and really just trying to remember that God's in charge. And, you know, in step three, my sponsor pointed out something neat to me that I never saw before, and I've read this book a bunch of times. And, you know, in the third step, it talks a lot about, like, different concepts that you can pick for your higher power in terms of, like, you can think of it like a father, and you're the child. You know, that could be one analogy. Or you could think of it as, like, the principal and the agent, that God's the principal and you're the agent, and you're out there to do their bidding, just like if, you know, it was Tiger Woods or something like that, and you're their agent, you will go out and represent them. Or the director and the actor, you know. And it's funny because I've read that a lot of times in the third step, and I sort of thought I understood that. But then even more so recently in the 11th step, you know, it talks about kind of how to live that out. And I didn't really see that before. And I'm just going to kind of quote from the book real quick. It says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. We ask for the right thought or decision. And that's sort of like the Father. We're asking. You know, we go to the Father like a child and we ask for the right thought or decision. Then it says, we constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. So again, I'm not running the show. I'm not the director. I'm just the actor. You tell me who, what, where, when, I'll be there. Doesn't matter anymore. My life is none of my business. And humbly saying to myself many times, this is again from the book, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. You know, again, that's the agent. I'm the agent and my higher power is the principal. Thy will, not my will. What do you want? You know, and then it says we're much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily for not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. And it does. It really does work. When I put these things into practice, it really does work, undoubtedly. And just real quick, like I said, the last thing is the carrying the message and trying to sponsor and speak when I'm asked and do that, because for a long time, you know, I didn't want to sponsor. I didn't think I was qualified. I didn't think, whatever, I don't know exactly what it was, but, you know, I've heard them say, like, you can't keep it if you don't give it away. And I do believe that to be true. Sponsorship has changed my life. Being a sponsor, as well as having a sponsor. You know, and I can't really, in all good consciousness today, I can't ask things of a sponsee that I don't do myself. Like, I can't tell them to pray and meditate if I'm not doing it. I can't tell them to get to meetings if I'm not. I can't tell them to call me, you know. So it actually helps. It helps keep me in check, you know, by having a sponsor and also being a sponsor. And again, just so many things that I can't even articulate, that I can't even put into words. All I can say is that I'm a miracle. I'm definitely a miracle. I take no credit for any of the things in my life. It's all God-given. And it's also free and available to anyone. You know, I don't have a monopoly on it. None of us do. It's there for anybody who wants it, anybody who's willing to take certain actions. You know, our literature talks a lot about promises, but it also talks a lot about warnings, like what will happen if we don't do certain things. And, you know, I don't know, I'm a stubborn person. I have to do a lot of research and development. I had to test a lot of this stuff out. And like I said, I still, to some extent, once in a while, get caught up in certain things with the self-sufficiency and all that. And it just, you know, it's just such a much better way of life. It's not just about not eating. It's really just a whole new way of life, and I'm very, very grateful. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much. Sharing this with us. Usually after the speaker speaks, we ask if anybody has a question. Yes, ma'am.
Which tools do you like the most? Do you have any favorite tools?
I guess sponsorship would be a favorite tool. Meetings, writing. Writing is to me is a very spiritual action. I don't necessarily do daily writings like I know some people in program do, but I do. I've done different things over, I've done some daily writings, I've done some journaling, I certainly write inventory, but writing for me, I don't know, there's something about that pen and paper that my higher power speaks to me through writing. So that those were, I guess, my favorite ones.
I'm Nick. In a way, I've seen many different philosophies of when a sponsee can sponsor. What do you do with your sponsees, or what did you sponsor do with your, like, it, as far as, like, you know, stepwise or days of abstinence and writings, or, you know?
My experience with my sponsor currently, and I'll go with that, and I've had it for a while, and sort of what I do is more with the steps. It doesn't, to me, time is really more irrelevant, and I don't necessarily do daily writings like some people do. Again, each meeting can maybe have their own requirements, and I respect that, but for me personally, it's been like when I'm getting somebody into the ninth step, when they've gotten through inventory and they're going out to make their amends, because I kind of feel what was taught to me is like you have to have something to give away.
Right.
So, you know, kind of like that is like when they get into amends, then they're ready to sponsor.
Thank you so much for your share tonight. It was absolutely delightful. You mentioned meditation. How do you meditate?
I recently started a new practice that that was one of the areas that I wasn't feeling too consistent on and I didn't feel was really working. So very recently I asked for some extra help from somebody else in the fellowship. You know, in addition to my sponsor, I reached out because I learned to do that today. And it's certain positions. There's a website which I can share with you after the meeting if you're so interested, because it's not conference approved or anything, so I wouldn't share that in the meeting. But it's a little bit about position, like there's a certain position that I use. And then I do a little ritual to like quiet my mind, and then I sort of count breaths, and I keep a little timer. And I've been slowly increasing the amount of time that I sit for, and basically just try to you know, not think, really, is the whole purpose of the meditation, is to not think. And then when a thought does come, it's more like, okay, thought came in, let it go out, and then get back to the counting of the breaths.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.